We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is the smell of the leftover tuna fish sandwich you left in your lunchbox over the weekend in a wimpy trash bag.
Wimpy, wimpy, wimpy!
Blech! And this is the smell of that same sandwich in a hefty, ultra-strong trash bag.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
Ah, smell the difference? Hefty Ultra Strong has Arm & Hammer with continuous odor control, so no matter what's inside your trash, you can stay one step ahead of stinky. And for bigger jobs, try the superior strength of Hefty Large Black Bags.
Today's episode is brought to you by the folks over at SeatGeek, the best and easiest to use ticket platform out there. They take the confusion out of buying tickets using a 0 to 10 scoring system and a green is good, red is bad color rating system so you and your loved ones get the best deal possible. So whether it's going to see our beloved Red Legs at Great American Ballpark, the Bengals over at Paycor, FC Cincinnati, one of the area college teams, or pretty much anything in between, use promo code RIVERFRONT at checkout and receive $20 off your first order. Click the link in the show notes to download the app and get started. That's RIVERFRONT, one word, for $20 off.
What is up, everybody? Welcome once again to the Riverfront, or the Bengals show presented by the Riverfront. Wow, I renamed this a month and a half ago, and I still can't remember it. Again, nothing but the best for y'all. I am your host, Joe Farsing. Alongside me is Greg Niemann. Greg, how are you, sir?
Fantastic. How are you?
I am good. Did you have a good Thanksgiving?
I did. Lots of food and some adult beverages. It was all good.
Are you done with the all the leftover turkey?
Yes. I did take some, I did have a nice chunk of leftovers, but yeah, I devoured those off pretty quick. I think we lost your volume, Joe.
So yeah, by Sunday, I was so done with having leftover turkey and mashed potatoes and all that crap. I told my, like, she still wanted to eat it. I'm like, nah, we're done. We're good. We ordered out for something. I'm like, I'm out.
Yeah.
Too much. I'm not the biggest turkey fan. It was really good this year. Like my wife did a fantastic job, but it's just way too much.
You got to watch this. I've got to finish the turkey pretty quickly. The sides I can do for a while, but the turkey's got to go pretty quick.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, the problem is we ate the sides were all gone by before we even got to dinner. But yeah. You know, the mashed potatoes, I did the mashed potatoes by hand. I do mascarpone whipped potatoes, and they're delightful. But even those, you get a little tired of after. Then it's like, nah, we're good. We can have some ordered in food or cook something else. I don't care. So,
yeah.
Anyway, before we get going, if you guys are watching on YouTube, smash the like, smash subscribe, all that fun crap. Turn notifications on so you guys can see when we happen to be live or when we have new videos. Besides just us, we've got Late Night Reds with Tim and Ben, Riverfront Reds Show with Nate. Chad is back this week. He's got Bill Lack that'll be up pretty much same time as ours hits your feed. So watch all of them. Do you want to talk about last week's game?
I mean, sort of, yeah. I got some things to say.
Yeah, it's Bengals lost 16-10 to the Steelers. Did it feel like a one possession game?
No. I mean, it felt like the Bengals were behind the eight ball for majority of the game.
Yeah, like I know the Bengals, like they scored a field goal there and then tried, you know, with right before the two-minute warning to bring it within one possession, then tried the onside kick. But that it just the way the offense was going, and more importantly, the defense. They gave up 400 yards to the Steelers offense, who hadn't put up 400 yards in 59 games, which is, in this day and age, to go, I mean, that's almost four complete seasons without one game over 400 yards. That's not even that great of a performance. That's just a decent day at the office. It's 300 yards and, you know, and then 100 yards on the ground. And they blew by that with Kenny Pickett hitting passes downfield. Pat Freiermuth pretty much was playing against air. Even though Deontay Johnson looked like he had absolutely zero interest in playing the game, receivers were still open, and it's just, what's going on with the defense? What do you think the problem with the defense is?
I think a little bit of it is just confidence. It's hard to play defense when you know your offense is struggling, and you know you're just going to continue to be behind the eight ball, as I put it. When you have to have a stop every single time and you're on the field continuously, if you're not playing with, you know, high energy and high spirit on defense, then you're already screwed. It's hard enough to stop NFL teams, you know, when things are rolling well for you offensively, when they're not, and now you just have to play defense exclusively to try to win games. It gets tough. Very quickly, and all of a sudden things that you wouldn't normally give up, you're giving up a couple extra yards here and there because you just don't have that confidence that your offense is going to take care of what they need to take care of. So I think it's a combination of a lot of things. I think the youth has a part of it. I think the offense has a part of what the defense is doing. Injuries didn't help. Kim Taylor-Britt being out, I think he would have made a big difference. But I think it's just kind of the general being of this team is, you know, everything's kind of close, but no cigar. Just can't quite get to the level we need to at the times we need to. So it's just been missing it by that much.
Everybody talks about, everybody, coaches and Coach Speak, they talk about complementary football, offense and defense playing kind of hand in hand. And to me, it almost seems like this is working in a negative fashion.
We lost you, Joe.
But yeah, it's again, like I was saying, I mean, the offense isn't sustaining any drives, so the defense is out there too long, and they're out there too often, and they're getting what, 2 minutes of a break on the sideline before they put back out there because the offense is going three and out. It's to me, a lot of it is there's just not enough pass rush, and Bengals have so many young players in the secondary. I mean, their primary secondary, you know, at least for their starting cornerbacks and safeties, they're all first and second year players. I mean, Cheeto has been supplanted, and I mean, you can count Mike Hilton, but I mean, you've got DJ Turner and Cam Taylor-Britt, and then you have Jordan Battle and Dax Hill, and those players have a lot of promise, but they're also young players, and they're going to make mistakes, or there's just going to be breakdowns in communication. Again, this is what everyone was worried about with the two starting safeties leaving after last year, and it's come to fruition, and it's bitten them in the ass hardcore. Again, I don't know. I think Dax Hill has been about what they expected, you know, the drop off to be. And granted, Nick Scott was terrible and supplanted by Jordan Battle, but Jordan Battle has been one of the better safeties in the entire league as a rookie. So, you know, you're still getting quality play. It's, as someone who coaches the secondary, how important is that communication and cohesion in terms of, not even with play, but in terms of just making sure everyone's in the same spot, making sure in a zone, making sure that, like, when you're handing off coverage, knowing, trusting the guy who you're handing off to?
Oh, it's massive. It's massive. I mean, it takes weeks, if not years. I mean, it takes a long time to really, you know, feel comfortable in passing this stuff off. The other part about it for the secondary is, I mean, you're never putting them in a really good spot of where, you know, your offense is scoring and you have a lead and now the other team has to throw the football. You know, everything the Bengals are doing right now is from behind on defense. So play action is always going to be, a part of the other team's offense. The Bengals are not in enough occasions where they know the other team's going to throw the ball. That allows you to get the pass rush. That allows your defensive backs to know it's going to be passed. You don't really have to worry about the run game. That's not happening for the Bengals right now. And the young secondary is not getting the easy looks defensively that they would want, where I know you're going to throw the ball. So I think, you know, you tie all of that stuff together and it just equals bad news for a young secondary.
Yeah, and it's not helping because the linebackers, again, we've gone into this before, and they're struggling in coverage. I don't know what the reason is. I don't think it's anything to go with, like, hey, they got paid, now they're slacking off. But it's, and again, maybe this is communication with the back end of the secondary. Logan Wilson is usually counted on as one of the best coverage linebackers, and especially carrying receivers down the seam, which is where you're seeing your throws to your tight end. He's passing it off too soon. It looks, again, it's easy to blame him, but then when you realize that these are rookie and second year players that he's, or Nick Scott, who's just been awful in every aspect, passing it off to guys that are inexperienced. So could that be part of it? I mean, Pratt hasn't been great himself either, but he and Logan are kind of do different things and like they cover different areas in coverage. Could that be part of it? Why it looks like the linebackers are struggling, or?
Oh, I think it's definitely part of it. I don't necessarily blame the linebacker or the safety. It's a combination of blaming the two of them. Because right now, and this is the beauty of the NFL, this is why the NFL is so amazing. The difference between Logan Wilson having horrible coverage up the seam and the Bengals secondary having great coverage up the seam is literally a step. They're one step away, and the 17-yard completion to Pat Freiermuth turns into a pass breakup or an interception by the safety. So, I mean, I think it's one step away, and that's what we talked about with these reps of getting the look enough times that you feel exactly comfortable on when that guy's going to be there. So it's not like they're miles away. They're a step away, but when you're a step away in the NFL, that's enough for 7 points.
Yeah, and not even a pass breakup. And if you're doing better job passing the coverage off from second level to the third level, they're just going to check down to the next option. He's going to be throwing a quick out to Jalen Warren in the flat or something like that. So that's, you know, you're tackling them for that's maybe a 3-4-5 yard gain, and you know, and that's still a win by the defense, in my opinion. A lot of the other issues, and we'll flip to the other side of the ball, I'm struggling with to explain why there's so many mistakes and communication issues on the offensive side. A lot of the sacks, like Browning was sacked 4 times. I can't put the blame of any sack on any offensive lineman. I know Jonah Williams was credited with 2 sacks on PFF. I think they're both bullshit. The first sack that TJ Watt had, it was a 5 second. It took 5 seconds for him to get to the quarterback. He had a pocket. Browning didn't get rid of the ball and just held on. You can't have Trent Williams, Orlando Pace, Willie Anderson, Anthony Munoz to ask some of these guys, these freaks, to ask to block them 5-6 seconds. If you hold your guy for 5-6 seconds, that's a win. Like, you won that rep, and Browning just wasn't getting rid of it. So I don't blame the offensive line for the sacks, but there were some communication issues out there. The one sack the Watt had, it looked like Sample just passed him off for whatever reason. There was a blitzer coming, and maybe it was just Steelers saw how the Bengals pass off coverages or how they pass off blockers, and they realize that, you know, if they run a blitz, you know, if they blitz somebody, Sample will go for that. And, you know, I don't know, but you have those issues. There was, they're getting a lot of procedural penalties. I mean, was it last week that Boyd had two false starts. Mm-hmm. They struggled getting plays off the with the play clock on Sunday. The stupid offensive pass interference on a screen. I mean, these are just communication issues. And then, I mean, those are ones that on a screen like that, those are whatever. But this is a team that's been together with the exception of the quarterback. Your offensive line has been together all year. Four of the guys have been together 2+ years. The receivers have been there. I mean, Tyler Boyd's in his eighth season. I was like, he's been around for a fair amount of time. And just these communication or just mental lapses. Bengals were the least penalized team last year, least amount of yardage. The entire Zac Taylor tenure has been, you know, they've been one of the cleanest teams. This year, it's not there. Is it just struggling with everything else and then just playing from behind? You're in and we're uncomfortable with where you've been the last couple of years and you're just brain farting? What do you attribute these issues to?
Well, I think it's a little bit of playing from behind. I attribute a lot of it to the youth, and I know you're saying, well, they don't play a ton. Well, you're still trying to get them caught up, or you're still trying to get them on the same page with everything you do, especially with the injuries that have happened. The Joe Burrow injury, I feel like, early in the season, that almost takes the offense back three or four steps because they have to do some things that they wouldn't normally do. And now it's like putting in a whole new offense for Joe being injured. And then he comes back and now you have to go from offense A to offense B midseason, which I know you have a lot of veteran guys, but it's still something you have to do. And we talked about it on defense. We'll talk about it on offense, the reps, especially with, you know, the way NFL teams practice now, it's not what it used to be. Everything's getting less and less and less and less. So when you have to switch offenses like that midseason, that's definitely a part of it. I just don't think the Bengals look comfortable. And when you're not comfortable, these are the kind of things that happen. But I completely agree with what you said about the offensive line. I thought they played pretty well. I did think Jake Browning missed Drew Sample once on the delayed release, where he stays in to help with pressure and then delays his release where we saw the touchdown against who was that a couple weeks ago? The long touchdown for Drew Sample. Yeah. I thought he missed that once. I put that on Jake Browning. I thought Sample released at the perfect time, and that play was there. I think Burrow probably makes that play. And Jake Browning's probably really never seen that rep live because, you know, as the pressure gets to you in practice, well, that's the end of the play. Jake Browning's not going to get lit up in practice. So that's probably his first time really seeing that timing play out. So I thought that was one that he missed as well on one of, I don't know if it ended up being a sack or if I think he tried to throw it vertically or down the field a bit and got hit as he threw. But I just think they're missing things here and there. They just don't look comfortable on offense.
Yeah, and we'll get more specific into the offense here. They couldn't and didn't try to run the ball. Joe Mixon had 8 carries for 16 yards. Browning had 3 carries for 9 yards. So they had a total of 25 yards on the ground. After the game when Taylor was asked, they tried to run, it was ineffective, and then they didn't have a lot of plays. They only ran 41 plays on offense, 4 sacks, so that's 37 other snaps. And running it 8 times is, I mean, that's still barely over 20% of your usage. This is my frustration and confusion with why don't they use more of their running back room. If you're running Mixon into the line 8 times and he's only getting 2 yards, he had 0 negative gains. So this isn't like he had a 5, 6, 7, 8 yard gain and that was negated by a 3 yard loss later in the game. No, these are 8 handoffs between 0 and I meant to check what his longest rush was, but it couldn't have been more than 4 or 5 yards. Again, they refused to use Chase Brown. He was active, and he got 0 absolute. Yeah, Mixon, his longest gain was 4 yards. So 8 carries between 0 and 4 yards. Didn't use Chase Brown one snap. Said that he didn't have opportunities to use Zach or to use Chase. I don't. Make that make sense to me.
That's the dumbest statement. I mean, that is the dumbest statement I've ever heard. Because you didn't have an opportunity to use Chase Brown. You're calling the plays. You called the plays. You. I don't care if you run 41 plays or 82 plays. If you want to run the ball with Chase Brown in a season where the playoffs are, you know, now out of reach, run the damn ball. I watched a game on Saturday, UK and Louisville, where Kentucky could not run the ball all game long. Could not run the ball. Liam Cohen, Kentucky's offensive coordinator, stuck with the run. You have to stick with the run. Eight rushing attempts from the running back room, you're going to lose. You're going to lose. And you're not going to explain to me that, well, we couldn't run the ball. Well, what the hell? You went out there and threw the ball and didn't get nothing done. So what's the difference? You have to force the run game. You have to. And Zach Taylor refuses to do it. And now that you have a backup quarterback in, it's even more of an issue that you have to force the run. I think this is the most frustrated I've been with Zach Taylor as the coach of the Bengals. I think the shine has kind of wore off a little bit. I personally thought this was one of the worst game plans I've ever seen put together for a backup quarterback, that you're not going to support him with a run game. I thought this was I thought it was basically pathetic that eight carries. Just think about going into that game. Hey, Jake Browning, you're the quarterback, first start ever, undrafted guy. This is your first year in the NFL. You were on the practice squads before this. You've never really had in-game action. By the way, we're going to run the ball eight times all game against the Steelers pass rush. That's genius. Yeah. I don't care if you gain no yards. You have to run the ball. You have to continue to run the ball. And I referenced that Kentucky game. Kentucky couldn't run the ball at all game. And Liam Cohen stuck with the run, and they busted a 40-yarder to win the game at the end of the game. That's what you have to do. You have to force the run. You have to. And the other thing it does, it keeps your offense or your defense off the field for 47 minutes. I mean, run the ball. I do not care. Run the ball. You have to. It's just a fact. You can't do this with rookie quarterbacks.
Well, and that's the thing. Bengals are a pass-heavy team. I'm okay with that. I'm a bigger fan of a pass-heavy team than a run-heavy team because it's not 1943. But you can't completely abandon it. Exactly. They went out and ran Joe Burrow's offense with Jake Browning. And again, kiddingly, I spoke directly to Zach Taylor last week. I stared right in the camera. Find a way to scheme up easy throws for Jake Browning. Roll out so he only has half the field, or run some gadget plays. They did none of that. It was the exact same shit. Nothing. This, seriously, you flip the jersey from 6 to 9, and you would not have seen any change in the play calls and the scheme. And what are you trying to do? Like, you can say all you want that you love Jake Browning. You love, like, he's got the intelligence. He's got the moxie. He's got the ability to run an NFL offense. He's not Joe Burrow. Also, this offense has been a really stagnant and stale offense with Joe Burrow. How many times have we gone on and on about how many just huge gaps in the game were the 3 and out, 3 and out, 3 and out? That's with the second best quarterback in the entire fucking world on your team. So now you're down to the 50th best quarterback in the world, who obviously can't operate and as we know, isn't as fast processing. And again, this is game one, so I assume he's going to be quicker. He's not going to hold on to the ball. I think three of those sacks were absolute, just holding on to the ball way too long. And he's going to get better at that first live action that he's seeing outside of a drive at the end, the second half last week and a drive at the end of the game in week one. More reps, your internal clock is going to get faster, but why do you not, playoffs are technically not out of reach. Coach is going to keep saying playoffs are within a reach. Last week, 5-5 with the schedule we went in, the schedule didn't, every team had a 500 or better record, but there's not loaded with a bunch of good teams. Steelers aren't a really good team. Vikings aren't a good team. They got steamrolled last week. Colts aren't a good team. Like the Browns are going to be playing nobody because they'll probably have the playoffs clinched by week 18. So you have a chance to make the playoffs, had a chance, if you would have tried anything to, first off, show Pittsburgh something that they weren't prepared for, because they knew exactly what they were going to do. They knew the runs you were going to do, because you're running the same fucking running back who can't run away from anybody. As soon as his feet stop, he's dead. Like, he had a, Mixon had a nice catch and run on a screen pass in a hurry-up drill at the end of the game. Great. He's not the guy you want. Like, what are they doing? I try to defend, and I think Zach Taylor is a fine head coach in terms as a motivator, in terms of having, like, setting the standard and the environment and the culture. I think he's done a fantastic job with that. His game plan and his play calling is awful. If you're just going to give Burrow the playbook as you do most games, let him call the fucking play since he's on the sideline right now. Give him that helmet and let him, because you know he's going to give Browning some plays that actually might have that might help him to get some easy completions. Again, if Andy Reid is going to scheme easy completions for Patrick fucking Mahomes, why aren't we scheming up easy completions for Jake Browning?
Yeah, it's disappointing. I mean, the way I look at it is, I'm not sure why the Bengals didn't trade Burrow and pay Jake Browning $275 million, because you did nothing different. You did nothing different. You thought it was the exact same thing. And if that's the case, then you're telling, I mean, it just doesn't make sense that you're not going to change the, so if Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins are out, we're just going to have the receivers do the exact same thing, and we're just going to assume they're going to be just as good. That's insanity. It doesn't make sense. So I agree with you about Zach Taylor as a head coach. I think he's a fine head coach, and you know, motivating and getting the locker room in order. I agree with all that. The problem is when you're also a play caller, when the players start to lose trust in you as a play caller, they're also going to lose trust in you as a leader. That's just the way it works. There's no compartmentalizing that. And I'm fearful to say, I think that day is closer than we think, because the offense has been so bad with Joe and with Jake Browning that, you know, Zach Taylor needs to, I know we said this last week, he needs to give up the play calling duties, because it will affect his leadership role in some capacity. And I don't really want to see Zach Taylor lose his job. But right now the play calling is so bad, it does beg the question of, you know, if he's going to continue to call plays, is it not better for us to go in a different direction?
Ja'Marr Chase is at any given point the best player on the field. Again, even with Joe Burrow, it doesn't matter offense, you know, doesn't matter what defense they're playing against. He had 6 targets total. 6 targets is nothing. Pat Freiermuth had 11 targets on the other side. Deontay Johnson had 8 targets on the other side. Tyler Boyd and Tanner Hudson both had 5 targets. Neither of those guys are Ja'Marr Chase. How you get away? And again, it's you. Why are you not scheming these? I get, like, when you're running through your progressions, when you're trying to be Joe Burrow, and he's just, you know, he's either going to go to his first read, and if it's not there, he's just going to hold it and take a sack. But run stuff, like, to free him up, like, put your team in the best situation possible to win the game, and they're just not doing that.
Well, to me, I think you have 2 options when you have a situation like this with a guy like Joe Burrow. When you have a young quarterback, there's 2 options. A, you're going to force feed Ja'Marr Chase and you're going to get him the ball as many times as possible. B, you're going to use Ja'Marr Chase as a decoy and it's going to get you easy throws to other people. But I didn't see that either. So it wasn't like Ja'Marr Chase took all this attention and then that allowed easy completions to other people. No, that didn't happen. So I think it was a failure on all fronts there. You either force feed Ja'Marr and let your best player either make or don't make the play, which I think we can all live with, or Ja'Marr looks like he's the play and then that opens somebody else. And I didn't see either one of those things go on, which again is insanity. I just don't understand it, to be honest with you. If Michael Jordan's out, I promise you Scottie Pippen's not going to take 6 shots. He's going to shoot the ball more than six times.
Maybe that's not the best comparison, because Scotty was the one that refused to go into the game because the final play was drawn up for Tony Kitch when Jordan was in his retirement, shall we say.
I'm not a huge Scotty Pippen guy. I'm not a huge Scotty Pippen guy, but you understand what I'm saying.
Right. Arizona game, we have Joe Burrow. Like, he's still not 100%, but what was the game plan? Because T was out. Jamar.
Four-speed jump.
Set a team record. Steelers have a good defense. Their quarterbacks aren't that great. Like, you can get completions on them. Quick passes. You set them up in the slot. Yeah, there's ways to get him the ball. Just keep throwing quick outs or keep going. Wow, we seem to have lost Greg there. And he's back. Screens, whatever. You put the ball, especially when you're limited. Again, we've talked about it before. The Bengals have zero team speed on offense outside of Jamar Chase. Tyler Boyd isn't going to run away from anybody. T. Higgins, when he's healthy, is not going to run away from anybody. Give it to the one guy that can run away. And if he doesn't, you throw it to him three times and you pick up 9 yards and you punt. Okay, you're putting the ball in the hands of your best player. And it just didn't work out. They covered it well, or you missed the throw, or he dropped, whatever, that's fine. But figure it out. Like, work out. It's just incredibly frustrating. I think this season has opened up a lot of eyes that, like, everyone thought that this team was Super Bowl bound. This clearly is not a team that would have won the Super Bowl, even with the healthy Joe all season. The defense has just been porous. But we talked about how this was possibly the deepest team that they've had, and depth everywhere. It's not there. The offensive line has, they've by and large been healthy all season long, but they're still just not very good. I think a lot of the offensive line issues are they have five guys that are just, three of them are low ceiling, and then your tackles, like, these are just a mismatch of guys that excel in different schemes and have, Pollock is an easy fall guy, and I think he's going to be the fall guy. I think Pollock is going to lose his job, and he probably deserves, it might not be the right word, but it's understandable if Pollock gets the axe after this year, because the offensive line has just been garbage, or takes him too long to coalesce under his thing. But bring in offensive linemen, that are athletes. They bring in these guys that are just obnoxious as hell. That just don't fit. Like, they're just slow, or they're fat. Like, great, they might be glass eaters or whatever the hell he wants to say, but these aren't guys that are, that are top of their level athletes. The best offensive linemen are top of their level athletes. Bring in those guys, and then bring in guys that actually fit the scheme that you're trying to run. So, whether it's...
Yeah, to me, I think Volson, you've really seen, is has become an issue. I mean, I think they definitely have to upgrade at the guard position. But I agree with what you're saying. I think the offensive line's done enough at times. But again, it's just another thing where they just don't necessarily look comfortable, which is really perplexing when they've had so much time together. Not all five, but, they've all been healthy this season. But you take multiple seasons for most of them, you would expect a little more cohesion there.
Yeah, and it's... This has been the problem since 2015, since Whitworth left, that they just haven't been able to identify either by draft or by free agency. And again, I stand by, I don't have a problem with the decision to let Andrew Whitworth go at the end of 2015. You look at his age, they drafted two offensive tackles. Jake Fisher had heart issues and had to retire. Like, that's, you can't foresee that. He was actually you talk about the athletic thing. He was a tight end. Like, they ran him on pass patterns. Like, he caught a touchdown, I think, or he had a couple pass receptions during that season. Like, he's a very athletic guy, but he had, he couldn't play because he had heart issues, and oh boy, he was the one because he was coming off a knee injury. But, like, that was a bad draft pick because you don't draft a guy who can't test, who has health issues in the first round. But it was a sound reasoning. It just didn't work out, which, fine, that crap happens. But that's been 8 years, and they've yet to put together a solid offensive line. They're in the top five in spending in the NFL of offensive line and defensive line, for that matter. And neither one of them you'd consider both solid or deep units. I think they need to figure something out there. And again, Duke Tobin isn't going to lose his job. He's not. No one's even going to give him a stern talking to. But he's number one to blame or to take the task for these because he has the final decision. He's the de facto GM. But things need to get better on that end.
Yeah, but if he's not going to lose his job, you got to hold somebody accountable. So then if you're saying that he's bringing in the right players, then obviously it trickles down, you know, down the mountain. Somebody's got to be responsible for that.
Yeah, it's an easy conversation to have. We spent all this money. Look how much money we're spending on our offensive line room, and they're not performing. Sorry, man.
Yeah.
You got to go. Now, again, like I said, these aren't the right people, you know, and Orlando Brown is a very talented offensive lineman. Jonah Williams, I think, was a decent draft pick if they would have played him at right tackle the entire time. Karras is a solid center, but Alex Kappa is a limited, low-ceiling right guard, and that's fine if he's the worst guy in your line. But then you have Cordell Volson, who, again, an old prospect. He was 25 coming into the league from a small school, and they drafted him in the middle of the rounds. And you didn't bring anyone in to even push him this year. And it's, you need to do more. They're gonna have a decent draft pick this year, probably top 15, if not top 10, depends on how the rest of the season plays out. Address the line, like put real assets into it. I understand they're gonna need receivers because Boyd's gonna be gone, and who, you know, T. Higgins might be here, might not be here, depends on what they do with the tag and things like that. But Burrow's going to be able to find, like, you drafted a couple wide receivers this past year anyway, a year before you needed to. Burrow's going to be able to find some, you know, whoever, so long as he's got Chase on one side, he's going to be able to find someone on the other side, so long as he's got an offensive line to keep him upright or to give him time. So just fix it right. We have 6 weeks and I don't know, these are questions, these are things that we've been talking about for years and years and years, and it's just magnified when things kind of go sideways as they are right now. I don't know what to do. All right, let's look real quick at the AFC North standings here. Ravens 9-3. They took out the Chargers 20-10 on Sunday Night Football. Jackson didn't have an especially big game, 177 yards and a touchdown on 32 passes. Not exactly very efficient, but they had the number one seed in the entire AFC right now. Browns 7-4. They got absolutely hammered by the Broncos. Are the Broncos actually decent now?
They really are. Sean Payton found a way to treat Russell Wilson the way the Bengals should be treating Jake Browning, and that is like a rookie quarterback. And he's figured out a way to basically eliminate all of Russell Wilson being Russell Wilson. And he's eliminated those mistakes, and then they just play really good defense behind him. We talked about a complimentary football. Sean Payton's best attribute this season has been, I don't want to say taking the ball out of Russell Wilson's hands, but only putting the ball in Russell Wilson's hands at the right time with easy throws. He's not allowing Russell Wilson to do a lot. He's keeping it stupid simple for Russell Wilson and then letting his defense eat.
Yeah, I mean, they won 29-12 pretty handily. Russell Wilson was 13 of 22 for 134 yards and one touchdown. They ran the ball 39 times versus 22 passes. And again, Bengals aren't going to do that because that's not their identity, but maybe it should be right now. Again, like, you can't tear up a game plan in the middle of the season, but you have runs. It's not as if you don't have run plays to call, and you have 11 games worth of tape to figure out what you run the best. And run that. No more of this 11 personnel shit because it's not working. You need two tight ends. They really need to quit running Mitchell Wilcox and Irv Smith out there because they do nothing. Like, they're just bodies. Two tight ends need to be Drew Sample because he can block, and Tanner Hudson because he's a solid enough blocker and is a the only tight end who actually does anything consistently in the passing game, which is hilarious for a guy that was on the practice squad a few weeks ago. Shove it down their throat. I mean, they've got Jacksonville coming up. Jacksonville is just a good team around, you know, and this is a team that everything would have to go right, and they would have to, and Jacksonville would have to pretty much crap the pants, maybe, you know, overlook the Bengals right now, which is funny to say, a team having to overlook the Bengals in the Joe Burrow era, but you know, these seasons happen. So yeah, exactly. And again, I'm not overly down on the, but it's, you know, these seasons happen, but you get on with it and move on. Steelers beating the Bengals. They are now 7-4. Steelers still aren't good. Kenny Pickett showed me absolutely nothing. You can throw on their defense if you could, if your pass protection can hold up, because Patrick Patterson is old. Joey Porter is, he's as big as a fucking nut job as his dad. You can get him out of his game. You run a physical receiver against him, and he's gonna, you know, he's gonna get called for holding or passing. You know, there's gonna be so much contact that they're gonna have to throw flags all game long. Again, you hold up against their passer, and they've got a good D line, but
I think you can force Joey Porter into complete meltdown mode. If you get a couple things on him, I think meltdown mode is definitely possible. And I can't wait to see it.
Yeah. And they're still missing Minkah Fitzpatrick. I mean, he's all pro, Pro Bowl safety. So they shouldn't be 7-4 this year. Again, this is their first game all season where they outgained their opponents, their first game in 4 years. And two of these years, you know, those are 2 years with Ben Roethlisberger. Those are almost four years without getting 400 yards. Like, it's a bad offense. It's a solid enough defense, but they're not 7-4 good, but they're 7-4. So what do you do?
I don't know who's the worst 7-4 team in NFL history. I don't know if it's the Steelers or if it's the current Browns. I really don't. Because they're both bad offensively, like bad.
You know who the Browns are going to be starting on Sunday?
Are they going Flacco?
Joe Flacco. Dorian Thompson-Robinson is, I think he's still going to be in concussion protocol. So Joe freaking Flacco is going to be starting a game for the current number 6 seed, Cleveland Browns. I guess I got them reversed. Steelers are ahead of the Browns in the play in the division. Steelers are the 5 seed, Browns are the 6 seed, and Joe Flacco is going to be starting against who are they playing this week? I'm looking at the wrong schedule. Like right now they're the 6 seed against the Jaguars is the 3 seed, and I don't, are if you're the Browns, do you hope Joe Flacco plays well? I don't think, like, you don't want that guy to be the guy. At least Dorian Thompson Robinson's a rookie and someone that you can hope grows within the offense and, you know, at least can be a system quarterback, someone, you know, who knows what's going on with Watson. He's going to be there for a couple years because that money is too huge to eat any, and they can't move any more money around. But what do you do? They're playing the Rams on Sunday.
I guess watching Dorian Thompson Robinson, and I'm not saying he won't be good in the future. It's not going to be this year. He's a ways away. So if I was the Browns, I'd be rooting for Joe Flacco to play well. Good luck. I mean, this is amazing. If you would have told me that Joe Flacco was starting for a playoff squad in week, whatever this is, week 13, there's no way. There's no way this is real. Here we are. I don't know. I mean, this is unbelievable to me. The Steelers and the Browns are two of the worst 7-4 football teams you will ever see. I can't wait to watch them play in the playoffs because it's going to be brutal.
What's great is they're going up against Aaron Donald. Now, granted, Browns have their interior of the offensive line is really probably the best with Teller Bitonio and Evan Pochick. Like they're great, but even an older Aaron Donald is still going to feast. And you've got Joe Flacco, which, what's slower than a statue? Like something that Joe goes Flacco. Backwards, I think. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If he's got pressure in his face, there's no way he's going to be able to escape. It doesn't even matter like how good the pass rush is on the outside. He's not going to be able to go anywhere with any pressure. It's going to be fun to watch. I don't think I want to watch because right now I'm so depressed about football. I mean, my Bearcats crapped the bed 3-9, and Bengals they play on Monday, so whatever. But yeah, they're going to win because they're not playing a very good team, and their offense is going to be offensive. But they're going to be in the playoffs, and the Bengals are going to be sitting home come January. So what do you do? Quick news and notes, not a lot here. T. Higgins, Cam Taylor-Britt, Logan Wilson all practiced today. This is Thursday. They look like they are ready to go. They should be able to go out by Monday unless anything else happens. Cheeto wasn't in practice. He's been sick. There's been, I don't know if it's a stomach bug. Something's been going around the Bengals locker room for the week or so. And he's just the next one to go down. Jermaine Pratt was, he was the one who was sick on, I think it was Saturday that he popped up on the injury report. Right after the introductions, he's on the sideline sucking down air or sucking down oxygen. So that's not, that tells you right now. Whatever he did on the field on Saturday, Sunday, I give him a pass because you know he was feeling it. But Trey wasn't on the field today. I didn't get any word why, but this is technically it's Thursday, but for practice week, it's a Wednesday since they play Monday. So it's probably just the vet day. But as of before we went on the air here, there wasn't any word as to what he was doing. But they should be pretty out, obviously outside of the big one of Burrow. They should be pretty healthy. I mean, they're going to have a full complement of receivers to throw to. So we're going to do a quick preview. Like, I'm not going to do a regular game preview again. Like the rest of the season, it's going to be more important as the things that we see that are going to be helpful. It's sorting out who's going to be helpful for next year. Who's going to, you know, who do you want to progress of your young players? Are there, you know, they're veterans that are on expiring contracts that are worth keeping around, or, you know, someone T. Higgins. So again, we're not going to be doing our regular week preview with all the keys and stuff like that. I mean, the keys for the rest of the season are on offense. Use the kids, use the kids, use the kids. On defense, use the kids, use the kids, use the kids. I mean, that's, this is what we need to see. Again, they're not eliminated from playoff contention. I mean, they're 5-6. They could win out and end up at 11-6. Ain't going to happen, but still. But we just want to kind of go into the key offensive and then defensive rookies that they have this year. Starting off on offense with Chase Brown. He still has 5 touches on the year, 3 runs, 2 catches, and just minimal, absolute minimal impact. He was active, got 0 snaps on Sunday. Have no idea why. I assume he's going to be active on Monday. I assume he's going to get some package in. I honestly think he needs to be in a timeshare right now with Mixon. Just to, A, Mixon's old and he's been the only one to carry, so you know he needs someone to take carries off his shoulders. And B, you need to see what this guy can, what this guy can do, or to see if you need to draft another running back next year, or you need to draft a, or bring in a backup running back or third down running back next year. So it's, they need to see. Like, what are your thoughts on Chase?
I completely agree. That when I talked about, you know, forcing the run game last week, I mean, 8 carries for 16 yards, and never, there was never a light bulb that went off that said, hey, let's give the guy we used a draft pick on. We value these draft picks, but we're not going to use him. The season's over, and I'm fine with that. I get it. I'm not blaming the Bengals or Zach Taylor or anybody, but the season's over. You don't want to make the playoffs because, you know, you can't. It's win it all or bust. Well, this season's a bust because you ain't going to win it all. So it's time to let's go. What do we have? I'm high on this kid. We were high on him when he got drafted. I know no more today than I knew the day they drafted him. That's a problem.
Yeah. It's one thing if he's been on IR the entire season, but he was healthy for the first, 5-6 weeks. You know, then he went on IR for the hamstring and immediately was healthy to come back. And we need to see what these guys can do. It's ridiculous that you got these guys for depth and the wide receivers. We'll get into the wide receivers here in a second. But again, 2 carries for 6 yards is all the rushes he's got this season. 3 catches for 7 yards, longest of 8. So he's had 2 other catches for -1 yard. This is a guy who has speed, who's got catching ability, who actually was graded out as a pretty solid blocker. And you've got him behind Travion Williams, who provides nothing on offense. Travion Williams might be a nice guy. He's done a decent job on kickoff returns. He had a really nice kickoff return on Sunday that led him to points. But they've run the ball with him over his 4-year. I can't remember how long Travion's even been around. He's been in and out, injured and everything. But hasn't done anything. We know that they don't like Chris Evans for reasons. Again, I think it would be wise to get him in just to get some, you know, a different player in there, but they're not going to, but whatever. Run the damn ball with Chase Brown. Chase Brown should get 10 carries on Sunday. Mixon should get 10 carries on Sunday. I don't care if they're losing by 5 touchdowns. You're not going to win that game if you're losing by 5 touchdowns. So, and especially you're going to get behind by 6-7 touchdowns if you throw that much with Jake Brown, because he's going to throw the ball to the other team. He should have had 4 interceptions last week.
Yeah.
Surprised he only came away with the one. That was just an awful read. As soon as he threw it, like he like immediately put his hands to his head, like, oh God, what the hell did I do? So,
well, and speaking on that, I think Trevion Williams is a perfect third running back. You get use out of him in special teams. If you have to bring him in on offense because you're down to your third running back, he's not horrible. I mean, he gets things. I mean, he knows the offense. He can run the offense. He's a perfect third running back. Why is Chase Brown not your number two is beyond me. It really is. It's beyond me.
It makes no sense whatsoever. But again, like we've been beating this drum for all season long. This is, you have more than one running back in your running back room. I just don't understand not using them. It's just, this isn't 1993. You don't run the same running back in the same. I don't get it. Next rookie is Charlie Jones. Again, we've gone into he had the punt return in week 2 against the Ravens. Then he's been injured, had the thumb injury. But for the entire season, one reception on 2 targets, 6 yards. He didn't have a snap. Didn't have a target last week. He was active. I don't even know if he had a punt return. The Steelers punted more than once last week. But had no reps on offense. And again, you have an old, NFL age old, slow slot receiver on an expiring contract in Tyler Boyd. Everyone loves Tyler Boyd. He's 30 years old in his 8th season. It's probably a good idea to get a look at his possible, and I don't want to say presumptive backup, because you don't want to just hand the keys over to someone who hasn't gotten any run, but now's the time to give him some run. Yep. I think that he's the perfect slot receiver with his quick, you know, his ability to, like, he's fast. I mean, I think he ran a 4.4 in the combine. He's shown the ability in college to get open. Again, I got on him because it looked like he was struggling in preseason to get open, but he was drafted for a reason. You need to have him show what you drafted him for on the field.
Yeah, I mean, to me, this is the same thing as Chase Brown and Joe Mixon. This should be a 50-50 duty. You know, if Tyler Boyd gets 35 reps or 35 snaps, Charlie Jones should get 35 snaps. I don't know what the difference is losing by 21 or losing by 7. Let's see these guys.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it's just, this is almost Marvin Lewis. Like, I mean, everyone knows Marvin Lewis hated rookies. He did not play rookies. He ruined John Ross's career because he basically just, the second he showed up in camp, he didn't want him as a draft pick. And he was in the doghouse from day one. Absolutely killed his confidence. And although I wouldn't mind, John Ross was released. I forget where he was. Wouldn't mind seeing him come back to Cincinnati. Just get some speed in the offense. You know, he's still got to be, still got to have a ton of speed, even though it's been, 2017? When was that draft? 2017, 2018?
It was pick the right 2017. Pat Mahomes? Yeah, it was the 2017 draft.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, I'm sure he might not be able to run a 4.22, but I'm sure he can still run faster than most of the other guys out there. So, but again, like we're talking about Charlie Jones, and now we're going to Yosivash. Everyone loves Yoshi. He's probably the most beloved of all the rookies. He has 8 targets total. He had 2 targets last week, 1 catch for 16 yards. It was a nice catch, reception over the middle. I think it was 3rd down and 9, and he made the reception and gained an extra 7 yards. This is a guy who has the attributes. This was your 1-for-1 replacement for T. Higgins while T. Higgins was out. This is a tall, high point receiver, but he also has 4.4 speed, and oh, by the way, can literally jump over everybody because he's an Olympic world-class athlete. And instead, they ran Trent Irwin. I like Trent Irwin. He's got a spot on a football team. I don't care if T. Higgins is out there as your number two receiver or Yossi Vash. Trent Irwin should be your number four receiver regardless of out there, because he's low ceiling. He's going to catch the ball and he's going to make stuff happen, but he's not a guy who's going to, he's not a game breaker. He's not a guy who's going to go out there and jump up over guys and moss anybody. He's not a guy who's going to, like, that they continually ran him out there in T's spot in the lineup. It's just completely unimaginative, and just this is the offense that they were talking about. It's, well, he's the next guy up. Never mind that he has zero outstanding attributes. He's been here a while. He understands the system, and he's not going to screw up. At this point, I'm fine with guys screwing up. Well, with rookies screwing up, I want guys out there who can make plays. I want to see guys that can do something. And again, Yossi Vash is 6'3", 212 pounds, and ran a 4.4. And again, can jump up over anybody. Like, I guarantee he could out high point Randy Moss. And Randy Moss, the greatest receiver of all time. Randy Moss was not an Olympic world class heptathlete.
Right. And I don't necessarily have a problem with how they've used Yoshi so far, you know, in meaningful games when, you know, everything was still at stake. You know, he had enough, you know, he had reps, he had meaningful plays. But now this is where I really draw the line in the season. You know, you went into that Steelers game like, all right, if we can win with Jake Browning, we can still make the playoffs and make a run and whatever. That's all over now. You're 5-6. It's time to go ahead and to scrap it. And see what these guys have. So I'm really drawing the line in the sand that if these guys don't play now, it's a real problem. It would literally be one of the dumbest things I've ever seen, that you would not only A, worsen your draft position, but B, just not being able to see these guys play. I just don't understand why you would do that. I think this is the week where you really should see the flip of, you know, we're going to get some experience with these guys.
Well, the problem is T. Higgins is going to be back, so they're going to revert to just running their first team out there all the time. Yoshi's only been out there for 62 snaps on offense for passing downs on offense. And again, yeah, early in the season, again, he was a sixth rounder wherever he was drafted, and you've got legitimate 1-2-3 guys, so he's not going to see snaps earlier in the season, you know, unless it's, you know, run 4 or 5 receiver sets. But T was down earlier in the season, you didn't see him a lot, and he's been gone the last couple weeks. And again, he should have had 60 snaps over the past 2 weeks, not just 60 snaps over the entire season, because he's the guy who's been healthy. Like, he was out the 1 week, so I apologize. He was out last the week versus Baltimore. But you draft these guys, and who are you running out instead of them? You know, I mean, Shedrick Jackson got more run than he probably should have gotten as an undrafted guy. Trent Irwin's got 216 snaps on offense, or in pass sets, 216. Like, I like T.I. He should not be getting that many snaps on this season. He should only be your number four guy, and if someone gets hurt, he should be your number four guy. Run guys that you drafted. Like, that's why you drafted them, to replace them. So,
yeah.
Moving on from the frustrating side, now we can touch on the defense, which has looked a hell of a lot sunnier, especially of late. I'll let you hit on the defensive picks here.
Yeah, I mean, talking about, you know, the young defensive guys with Miles Murphy, DJ Turner, and Jordan Battle. I mean, Jordan Battle, to me, I don't know that you can expect more from a third round safety. I think he's just been absolutely terrific. I loved this pick when they made it. Going back to our, you know, draft review, I thought the Jordan Battle pick was fantastic. I didn't even think the returns would be this high this quick. So I've absolutely loved the Jordan Battle pick, and I think he's really played himself into a spot where he deserves to start for years to come without any question. For Turner, he's the one that I think when we talk about the NFL, we talked about the one step away. He really is a half step away from being what I think Cam Taylor-Britt has been. I mean, I think Turner is on the cusp of breaking through, at least in coverage, to really being elite. If you look at some of the times he gets beat, vertically, there are some things there that he can tighten up. But if he does tighten those things up, the half step that he's losing by, the Stephon Diggs catch comes to mind. There's a couple plays where he's just so close, but it looks like he's so far away, and it looks like an easy touchdown. I'm really excited to see where he goes, starting next year and having another year first off season in the NFL. I think he really is going to turn himself. I think the Bengals will be in a really good spot at the corner position. And then Miles Murphy, who I think the Bengals can be. To me, the one thing I would do is I would really just make sure that he gets, when he gets reps, it is multiple consecutive reps in a row. To me, I think that's the key. I just want to continue to see the motor, not on play one of a drive, not on, play two of a drive. I want to see his motor when it's play seven of the drive, and he's been in on all seven. But honestly, when you talk about the defensive side of the ball for the young guys, you really can't complain too much. I think, overall, you look at this draft class the Bengals have had on the defensive side, I think you would give it definitely a thumbs up. And on the offensive side, I think you'd be saying, I think it's a thumbs up, but we just don't know because you haven't let them play. So I think defensively, these young guys have done a really good job and really kind of solidified this Bengals draft as a pretty solid one.
Yeah, defensively, everyone had a big issue with getting Miles Murphy at the time, and everyone was absolutely losing their minds because for the first half of the season, he struggled to make an impact, wasn't in on a lot of plays. This was the plan all along with him. And again, there's a strong argument to be made over why are you drafting a guy that you're in the first round at a premium spot in terms of draft capital and positional value that you're redshirting, but he's also a younger, he's 21 years old. He's a younger prospect, and he's just now showing the ability. He was only in for nine pass rush snaps on Sunday. I could have sworn it would have been 20 because it seemed like he was in the backfield the entire time. He had two hits. He had a sack. He had another win on pass rush down. The sack that he had, the bend when he's coming around the end, I thought he was held. He was coming, like, arching around the end and absolutely just, I don't know if he stuck his foot in the ground, turned the corner so unnaturally, so fast, and it's such a sharp angle, like, and that's what they talk about the bend. It looked like he had been held because he just got pulled, like, he just came down in such an odd angle. But this is the ability. This is the traits. This is why he was drafted where he is. With this season, especially, I'm not counting this week as a loss, but this is going to be a tough week to win. I would like to see him get Sam Hubbard's spot for a third of the game. Give him every third drive, every other, one drive, he's coming in just for situational pass rush. And then every third drive, he's taking every snap at the left defensive end. With his body size and his strength, I want to see him get more, especially against rundowns, because that's where you see effort. Like, everyone's, when it's third down, everyone's giving you 100% effort on a pass rush. Like, you don't have to worry about that. That's Carlos Dunlap. I want to see the guy guy that's giving you, Trey Hendrickson. He's not great against the run, but he's giving you 100% on every run snap. Sam Hubbard, he's absolutely busting his ass on every snap. BJ Hill is taking too many snaps, but he's busting his ass on every snap coming from the inside. You're absolutely correct. Yeah, I want to see him in there more so that he can do it more. And again, that's where you learn about these guys by the more they do it. But yeah, I think they're seeing, you're seeing flashes of why this is where, why he was drafted where he's drafted and why people should be excited about him. Juan Drago, DJ Turner, he's absolutely, he got beat over the top on one play on Sunday. He was beat off the line, absolutely smoked off the line. This is a guy, again, he ran 4.27 40 at the combine. He had the speed to make it, and he was, it just got past him. Like, he has the recovery speed that, Kenny Pickett actually made a throw, dropped it in right in the perfect spot, right? And if that ball was like to his back shoulder or just slightly underthrown, it'd have been a pass breakup. He's been absolutely what Cam Taylor-Britt was last year. I think he's going to be a better player than Cam Taylor-Britt. Personal opinion. He's a different type of cornerback. Cam's the more physical guy, but I think Turner's going to be the better coverage guy. Jordan Battle, again, he's still technically listed. They put out their depth chart for this week. Nick Scott is still technically listed above him. Nick Scott isn't the starter. Jordan Battle got so many more snaps from last week. That's how it's going to be the rest of the year. Like, whatever it's listed on the depth chart, that doesn't mean anything. Among all safeties that has 20%, played at least 20% of their snaps, Jordan Battle is 11th in PFF grade. That's for, he's got an 83 grade in run defense. He's got an 84 grade in tackling, 72 grade in coverage. Like, this is above Tyrann Mathieu, Malik Hooker. I mean, these got absolute guys, Jordan Poyer, Harrison Smith, guys that have been out there forever, and he's not playing them. I'm not going to mention who's number two on this list because I think we know, and he had a 97-yard pick six for the Dirty Birds in Atlanta, but
yeah, I didn't peep that out.
Yeah, people wouldn't be missing Jesse Bates as much if he weren't playing so damn good this year, but people forget Jesse Bates was hot and cold. He had like certain years he would play lights out. Certain years he would play poorly. Like him playing lights out this year, awesome, good for him, but this isn't the guy he's been on. You know, like, earn his contract, and you know, he's absolutely playing lights out, but he's been a guy that was in his ability been up and down. He's having a hell of an up year, but
the one thing I will give him during his Bengals tenure was he did show up in the playoffs.
Absolutely. 2021, I mean, he did not have a great season. I mean, that was his contract year. He even said that his the unresolved contract issue was in his head, and he felt that his play suffered because of it. But yeah, absolutely. From first game against the Raiders all the way up into the Super Bowl, he was the best player on defense, and there really wasn't a question about it. I mean, he was fantastic. So again, good for him. I'm happy he's playing well. Happy, you know, he's got a hell of a nice contract, and he's living up to it. But I think the Bengals are going to be just fine, especially in the defensive backfield with Dax, with Jordan, with Cam Taylor-Britt. Next year is going to be curious what they're going to do with Mike Hilton. He's on expiring contract. He's older. We'll go into this stuff. I think next week we'll hit on some of the veterans on expiring deals. That what should we see from them? Should they, you know, should they be looking to replace them, or should they be looking to extend them? But as of now, I mean, the Bengals secondary is young and talented and performing relatively well. I mean, the Bengals defense has been gashed, but the issues that you're seeing are issues that you'd expect with a young secondary, but you're also seeing growth, and you're seeing the physical ability and the traits that show why these guys were drafted where they were drafted. So,
yeah, totally agree.
Like I said, any prediction for what goes on? I mean, Bengals are 9-point underdogs. It's the biggest underdog since 2020 when they play. I think they were 17-point dogs in week 17 versus the Ratbirds. What do you think is going to happen in Monday night?
I think that it'll be a little bit, obviously a low scoring game. I think the Bengals will keep it close for a little. And then I think Jacksonville, early mid third quarter starts to kind of pull away a little bit. I like Jacksonville 24-13 type of score. I think they win by two scores. I don't see a massive jump that's going to happen from the offense. I do think they'll play a little bit better. But I just don't see how the Bengals will be able to slow down that Jacksonville offense enough to win that game.
Yeah, and the Jaguars are 8-3. They're only plus 29 in point differential. They're 4-1 in the division. That's still not a very good division. Colts are surprisingly 6-5. Houston, we already saw Houston. They've got talent, but they're not a great football team. And Tennessee, they absolutely kicked the Bengals' teeth in. They're 4-7, but I think there's a better chance that it's a boat race and the Jaguars win by 3 touchdowns than the Bengals pulling it out. I'm going to go similar spread. I'm going to go 28-17. I think the Bengals offense looks better. I'm not going to guarantee, but I'm going to assume that they're going to, that Zach Taylor and Brian Callahan are going to do some things to try to make Jake Browning's life a little bit easier. Again, if someone is football uneducated as me can understand some of the similar things, like just trying to figure out ways to make plays easier for your quarterback. And maybe I'm just being too simplistic about it, but just simple stuff like rollouts. When you see college coaches doing these stuff, when they have to put in redshirt freshmen, you know, at the end of a game who hasn't gotten reps, is why isn't an NFL team doing this stuff? And again, maybe they just assume and hope and think that Jake Browning can run this stuff because he's been around for a couple years, even though he's, again, he's the guy that, he's the same quarterback that we all were hoping that they were going to displace the backup quarterback. We wanted Trevor Siemian to take his spot. We wanted Will Greer to take his spot. Some people are calling for AJ McCarron to start getting stopped. AJ McCarron should not take any snaps for the Bengals if Jake Browning is healthy. Again, this is a guy who's 10, 11 years in, whenever that, I don't remember when the hell he was drafted. We all think of him fondly because they almost won the playoff game with him. He was terrible in that game. Like, he was not good, you know, before then, but the backup quarterback is the most popular guy. So just figure out a way for Jake Browning to make plays, get the ball into your playmakers, get the ball to Ja'Marr Chase. Again, I'd give it to Chase 10, 15 times, run the ball 20, 25 times using more than just one running back. And for God's sakes, try a gadget play, flea flicker, double reverse, Philly special. I don't care. Just something to give the Jacksonville Jaguars something to think about that they haven't seen. I mean, it's astounding how few, and again, I don't know how many, I can think of Bengals ran one flea flicker. Has there been any other gadget play that they've run, like a double reverse, anything like that?
I think they did run kind of one reverse, I believe, if my memory serves me correct. But, you know, you see that on a weekly basis in the NFL, and you just don't see it with the Bengals. So I would say no.
Yeah, I mean, their creativity is limited to jet sweeps that, for as great as Ja'Marr Chase is, he doesn't do anything with jet sweeps. So find something else. It's frustrating. Yeah. But, again, it'll be an interesting game. Again, I want the Bengals to play well. Again, I don't want the Bengals to lose out just to get the best draft pick and hope maybe that Marvin Harrison falls down the draft boards. That's not going to happen anyway, but I want them to, you know, I want them to win. I like these are guys, these guys have pride. I like the players. I like most of the players a lot. And you want them going into the offseason, you know, saying, hey, listen, look how we finished this year without our quarterback. With our quarterback next year, like, you know, make a few tweaks here and there, and we're going to go out and kick some ass in 2024. But I just don't see it happening this week.
No.
Any final thoughts? Any parting shots before we get out of here?
Non-Bengals related, but I saw a clip from the Dan Patrick Show with Cam Newton, and they're asking Cam about how many teams he could start for in the NFL and yada, yada, yada. And Cam Newton's talking about, well, I don't know about starting, but I would have loved to have been a mentor for Bryce Young in Carolina. Like, bro, ain't nobody calling you to be a mentor. You're the worst example of a mentor in the history of football. And this guy still thinks, I mean, Cam Newton's the most delusional man on the planet. You steal a laptop in Florida and you get kicked out of Florida, and now you want to be a mentor? You almost got Auburn, you know, vacated a national. You're a bum. You're a bum. Nobody wants you as a mentor. Nobody wants you as a quarterback. Nobody wants you as a football player. And you might be the most athletic 6'6 human that's ever walked the earth, and nobody wants you. What does that tell you about yourself, Cam Newton? God, I hope he sees that. He is an
delusional
idiot.
Delusional is absolute the word when it comes to him. He had some really cool funky hair. I haven't seen that. Does he still have the weird, I don't know what the hell they are, but they look like weird twists and weird angles.
Yeah, and he's I could not dislike a person more than I dislike Cam Newton.
Strong words. Really, and I'll make sure this gets, I don't even know where the hell to find him. He might be living on the streets here in 6 months. I don't know. I think he's legitimately got some mental health issues. Final words before we get out of here. Our brother here at the Riverfront, Ben Brown, he's co-host with Tim on Late Night Reds. His Cooper Jaguars are playing state finals, Kentucky High School state finals, Saturday night against Bowling Green. So
yes,
good luck. Congrats to him. Yes. Congrats to his boys. They all have bleach blonde hair now. That was their thing after they made the state finals. They were on, I think, local Channel 5 news or something. So good luck to them. Hopefully we'll be checking in.
And this is Cooper High School's second state championship ever. Okay. And their first one, they lost to Bowling Green. So it all comes around. Here's your shot for time number two. Go Jags. Good luck, Ben Brown, Randy Borchers, the whole Cooper staff. I wish you guys the best.
Amen. I second those thoughts. All right, everyone. You guys have a good weekend. We will be back here next week. We're probably not going to do any live shows the rest of the because it's, I don't have it in me to come on live after some disheartening loss. So we'll be back here next week again, just talking about hopefully Bengals win and going into Colts week. So everyone take care.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.